This is the Vermont Edition podcast. You know what makes a great podcast? Editing. This episode is shorter than the version you heard on air. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. As late as Friday afternoon, lawmakers in Montpelier, as well as journalists, lobbyists, etc., all believed that the first half of the legislative session would adjourn on Saturday. But then Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ashe put a hold on negotiations, and he and House Speaker Mitzi Johnson announced that lawmakers would pick up where they left off on Wednesday of this week. The crux of the issue that's holding things up right now is the fate of some savings from a change in the health care plan for Vermont's teachers. Governor Phil Scott has floated a proposal that he says would save taxpayers up to $26 million. To accomplish that, he'd like to see the health care plan become a statewide plan, rather than something negotiated at the local level between teachers and school boards. And the savings would go into taxpayer savings. Democrats in the House and Senate have not liked that idea. Well, most of them have not. Some House Democrats voted in favor of the plan last week. But Democratic leadership has suggested that the state could still recoup those savings while keeping the local collective bargaining agreements in place. We're going to spend some time today focusing on what exactly has been happening in Montpelier, why there is this tension within and among Democrats and other lawmakers and the governor. And we're going to do so with House Speaker Mitzi Johnson. Speaker Johnson, thank you very much for coming to the show today.
Thanks, Jane. Pleasure to be here.
How do you frame this issue and this tension?
So the Affordable Care Act, which expanded coverage for a lot of people, also had a provision that not a lot of folks know about called a Cadillac tax. And it meant that by 2018, insurance plans that covered very thorough benefits would have a surcharge placed on them. Many of the plans that school employees or teachers have fall under that. And so the entity that provides insurance to teachers has shifted the plans that they're offering. So no matter what happens this week in Montpelier, by January 1st, all school employees that currently have health insurance, and not all do, but all of those that have health insurance will be on a very different health care plan.
And that happens regardless of what lawmakers decide about where that money should go and how it should be negotiated. They have to change healthcare plans.
Yes, and that's already underway. So what we're talking about here is those plans have lower premiums and higher out-of-pocket costs. And so depending on how you pay for those premiums and how those out-of-pocket costs are potentially reimbursed, that's where some of the savings could come from. And for the next fiscal year, it's about 1.3 cents on your property taxes is about the maximum cost that we can think of saving.
And for teachers, is this a guarantee that they're going to have a less good plan, essentially?
That depends on the negotiations, really. I mean, because no matter whether it's negotiated at the state level or at the local level, the key word is negotiated. Everybody gets a say in the process, and you have to come to some sort of agreement somehow. So right now there are debates, you know, going on about who should be doing those negotiations. But there's also a lot of fiscal analysis going on to figure out what happens if most of the teachers, even after the negotiations, there's still a lot of variables once the negotiations are finished, because there are still four plans. And so if teachers stick with the plan that's closest to the one they have now, much of the potential savings evaporates if they choose family plans versus single plans. If there are a lot of variables.
All right. And this is partly why the governor and lawmakers have all been saying up to $26 million in savings. There's always been that very careful caveat of up to, because it's certainly not a guarantee of $26
million. Oh, goodness, no.
So you held a vote in the House last week on the governor's proposal to have this statewide contract. So essentially to take it out of each district negotiating with the teachers on their health care plans, as they do for other parts of their teacher contracts, and to move that health care into a statewide plan that would be negotiated at the state level for all the teachers. There was an amendment on the House bill. You had a vote on it. It very nearly passed because 16 House Democrats voted in favor of it. Were you surprised by that vote? You had to essentially create a tie, which killed the amendment.
Right. I think for a number of different proposals that you've seen on the House floor this year, there's been strong support for anything that says we can potentially lower property taxes. Most of those same 16 people also voted for the next amendment that was up that did the same thing with local bargaining. So the difference between the two was who controls the bargaining. But they both said there's $16 million of savings up to $26 million of savings. And all of those, most of those same people also voted for the second one. It's that real palpable frustration with property taxes. It's the reason that the governor's budget got rejected out of hand when it arrived in the House. I can't tell you how many, frankly, Republicans quietly wound their way to my office and said, oh, my God, we're going to do something about this, right? We can't pass this budget, the original budget proposal that put $50 to $60 million on property taxes. And so the fact that the House worked together so well to eliminate those pressures on property taxes, I think was evidenced by the vote of 143-1 on a balanced budget that took care of basic needs, that did not raise any property taxes. It's one of the reasons that we're negotiating so heavily with the Senate on the budget, because they put $8 million back on the property taxes. Property taxes are a big deal.
Well, if that's the issue, if Democrats and Republicans all want to see taxes lowered, and Democrats can come up with a way in the House to say, here's how we could do this with capturing some of those savings from the teacher health care plans without making it a statewide contract. You know, we have a plan where the state could get some of those savings, but it could still be bargaining at the local level. My understanding is you didn't have to hold a vote on the Beck Amendment, which was the statewide plan. So if you know that what people want is to save taxpayers money, why vote on that amendment that essentially gives the governor more leverage in saying, see, people like my plan?
There were procedural things that I could have done to not ever have taken that Beck Amendment up. And that is part of the power of the speaker. But one of the things that I said that I would do when I became speaker was protect all voices in the discussion. And it was I think it was very important to have that debate on the House floor.
So that was it. Just it's important to have the debate and therefore have it, because, I mean, you know, and you knew when you took this position, and you certainly know now that there are politics involved in this.
Sure.
And some people would say your role as House Speaker, in addition to being the leader of the House, is also to still be a voice for your party and to strategize so that your party's priorities are upheld. And they might argue that you didn't do that in this case.
I think by casting the vote, I absolutely did. And let's be clear, that debate was coming up somewhere, somehow, no matter what. And so to have it in to have it in a way that everybody knew it was coming up and to not be some sort of surprise, the debate was going to happen at some point. The unfortunate thing is that the debate happened in what should have been the last week of the session. This is a dynamic that we've known about for a couple of years. We've been facing this idea of the Cadillac tax for a while. We've known since last fall what the different plans would be. And the Beck Amendment or the governor's proposal should have been part of his budget to begin with. It should have been a proposal on the table in January for the people that wanted to raise this discussion so that we could really dig into the questions of labor law, of, does this mean there could be a statewide teacher strike? Or does this mean that that teachers would follow the same process as state employees and eventually potentially wind up at a labor board? People need to understand questions of, you know, what happens when there's a different governor? And if you have a really progressive governor that gives away the store, so to speak, and then property taxpayers just have to pay for that, that's a very real concern.
Have you asked the governor why this proposal didn't come down until a few weeks ago? I mean, it didn't come down last week. It's been out there for a few weeks. But why it wasn't in his original budget?
What he said to me is that he sort of hinted around the edges at something like that in his proposal. But his January proposal never said a thing about changing collective bargaining law to have this teacher contracts negotiated at the state level, at least for health care. And that's the piece that's causing the consternation. We should be spending our time working together on how to save the property tax payers money rather than nibbling around the edges of a discussion about procedure at the last minute when we can't have all the different players at the table.
If you say everybody knew about this, that the Cadillac plans were going to have to end and that teachers were going to have to go into the health exchange and have this renegotiation of their health care benefits, why wasn't there a bigger piece of this in what the House was working on earlier than this amendment that would say, okay, well, here's how we could see it working where the state could get some of this money? I mean, why not cut this off at the pass then and you guys do it earlier?
Well, because no action was needed. This is already happening in our communities.
But who gets that money is what's at issue, right? So the health care plans are changing.
That's correct.
But where that money goes from any potential savings is an issue. Does it go back to the districts? Can the school districts take that money and put it into either their operating budgets or infrastructure costs, or is it going to go back to the taxpayers? That's the issue, right? And I mean, that's part of the issue is who gets that money. And that's where this amendment that you're talking about comes from, where House Democrats had come up with a way for the state to get that money and have it go back to taxpayers.
Right. So if we did nothing, the status quo is that savings can be generated and local districts and local taxpayers can decide what to do with it. That's the way it works. If there's money saved in one place in the budget, then local folks get to decide how they want their money to be used. And that's that's the core of our education system there.
And you'd like it to stay that way? Is that how you think it should be? That we shouldn't be negotiating any of this right now? That just should be the way it is?
I think ideally that's the best way to proceed. When the governor put on the table the centralized control of that negotiation, he also said we'll probably generate some savings, and one third of that could go back to the taxpayers. Like 3/4 of a penny on your tax rate can go back to the taxpayers, and we're going to take the other 2/3, and Montpelier's going to scoop it. And that's where I got a little hot under the collar and said, no way. No matter what happens and where this is negotiated, it's got to go back to taxpayers. So, you know, in my own county, in Grand Isle County, they've just wrapped up negotiations, and the school boards there have actually negotiated at least as good a deal, if not a little bit better, than what the governor has put on the table. And so Grand Isle County voters can know that their school board got them at least as good of a deal and probably better than what the governor is talking about. And Grand Isle County voters have been really clear about their property taxes. And so that, you know, the problem can be addressed locally in that way. I haven't heard too many people over the years say, you should take my property tax money and pay for something else with it. And not many people over the years have said Montpelier should take more control over our education. And the governor's plan does both of those things.
Speaker Johnson, the funny thing to me, not funny, ha ha, but is that, you know, here you are saying, I want this to go back to taxpayers. And here's the governor saying, I want this to go back to the taxpayers. And here are legislative Republicans saying, this money needs to go back to taxpayers. And so you're all saying the same thing, essentially. And then there's this big sticking point about how to make that happen. But it's almost like each different constituency in Montpelier wants to claim the mantle of, I'm the one who's going to bring this money back to the taxpayers. And yet then there's all this sort of fighting around the edges that... I don't know. I guess it could be frustrating to people to think, well, if you all want to get the money back to Montpelier, then just do it. Or back to taxpayers, then just do it and stop fighting in Montpelier.
That's probably a great analysis. The thing is that we didn't all start out that way. You know, when the governor proposed spending money out of the property tax, out of the education fund, which is property taxes for higher education and innovation and economic development and childcare, that's not saving property taxes. When the governor says, I want to create savings and then scoop those savings to spend on something else, that's not saving property taxes.
So is he lying? I mean, is he speaking out of both sides of his mouth then? I want to save you money, but I'm not going to do it. With my budget,
I think some of his plans have resulted in some snappy sound bites, but people would be really disturbed to see the effect on their tax bills. And so, healthcare, as our president recently said, it's complicated, right? It's harder than one might expect, and so. There is an awful lot of controversy, like, because the core of the issue that everybody is now saying, make sure that the property taxpayers get it. We're doing quite a lot of analysis to figure out what's the best way for that to happen, and I still trust our local communities to do that work and that right thing. And make those decisions for their communities. And what the amendment on the table last week did, the First Amendment did, was to drastically change collective bargaining and pull that out at the state level. So, but the thing is, what I've heard from a lot of school board members is, because there is such a drastic change in the health proposals that are being currently offered, at the negotiations table, teachers want to make sure that they've got that health care piece settled before they start talking salary. And so one of the dangers of separating the two is that all negotiations just freeze at the local level, where things like salaries and length of school day and number of school days and all the other things that teachers and school boards negotiate on is just – it is just on hold until the healthcare piece gets sorted out. One of the concerns that everybody's admitted to is that when you negotiate, you know, if you got a really good quote deal on healthcare, and let me be clear that for the taxpayers to get a really good deal, it means teachers are paying a much higher out-of-pocket cost. It's the same amount of healthcare. It's a group of people that have been around a long time, and having just recently looked at all of the numbers, there somebody somewhere is going to have to pay for healthcare, and so what we see oftentimes is that if a group gets a higher out-of-pocket cost, they may also negotiate a higher salary to help make up for that. So I think we could do a much better job of just trying to work together a little bit more and work with our local communities to make sure that there's accountability in the system and to make sure that we weather this transition.
Mark writes, if this money is saved at the state level, will the statewide property tax rate be reduced? Won't these savings likely be negated at the local level as other provisions of the teachers' contract negotiations will likely include increased pay to make up for the increased costs the teacher would pay with these new plans? So are homeowners going to save any money, even if the state says it will save $26 million? We've been talking about this, but maybe you can clarify for Mark and others exactly how this would work, Speaker Johnson.
Mark has it right. He's right on there that if there's a centralized contract with lower health care costs and that's used to lower the base tax rate, then because you can't talk about health care in a vacuum, you have to talk about total compensation for your employees. There's a chance that gets bumped up in the salaries on the local level. And I think that's one of the reasons why having those conversations about salary and the whole benefits package at the same time in the same place with the same people at the local level is the way to go.
Well, but on that, Barbara says by negotiating health contracts separately, it seems that they're going to be winners and losers when it comes to health insurance for teachers throughout the state. This seems inherently unfair. Speaker Johnson seems against any idea of doing things at a statewide level, even though the size of Vermont's student and teacher populations beg for some economies of scale.
So there will be winners and losers, and I'm not sure how well that's been factored into potential savings. Right now, the average is around the employers paying about 84% instead of 80%
of the healthcare premiums.
But there are people, state employee school employees that pay 60% of their healthcare costs. There are 1,500 or so school employees that have no healthcare.
There are already winners and losers.
There's a really big range of what's out there right now. And so I think it's a really big jump to both move to these healthcare plans and jump to a statewide contract. I think too that we are a small state. Hawaii is a single school district. There are cities that have as many students as all of Vermont that are a single school district. But that's not the way Vermont is built. We are so proud of our independence and the unique characteristics of each town. And so I think that this big of a change deserves a conversation that is more robust than just a couple of days at the end of session.
Would you be open to it? If it started earlier, would you be open to a statewide teachers' health care contract if you had more time to think about how that would shake out?
I think it's yes. One of the things that I told people early on was I want you to ask the hard questions and really dig into subjects, even the ones that are unpopular, because that's how we're going to get to different answers. That's how we're going to get to the problems, to making progress on some of the problems that have really, really plagued us for a long time. We also have a lot of towns around the state going through Act 46 discussions. That's going to move towards standardizing some of the benefits that are out there.
And again, this is the district consolidation bill that asks school districts to come together and to find ways to have efficiencies and to have opportunities for students throughout a merged district that they might not have as individual schools.
Right. And that's one thing that on Friday night, actually, after we announced we were adjourning, the House took up the bill of the session. It's now on its way to the governor's desk, I'm pleased to say, that creates a little more flexibility for towns trying to do that. So I'm really pleased that we were able to come to some agreement on that and talk about how we can take our very independent individual towns and help them work together a little bit more.
It seemed on Friday night like you and Senate President Pro Tem Tim Ash had very different ideas for how to move forward here at the end of the session. And it was Senator Ash who basically put a hold on things and said, oh, let's see if we can get any more compromise. And it sounds like you were ready to say, we're ready to pass a budget, and the governor can veto it if he wants. Is that a fair characterization of the way that you and Senator Ash see things, or the differences between the way you see things?
I think we were getting close to that. The difference is that the Senator Ash had had an earlier one-on-one with the governor and was starting to shift some of his viewpoints based on that. My one-on-one with the governor was a bit later, and part of the problem too was that because of some of this, the Senate had pulled back from finishing their negotiations on the budget, and without negotiating those final points that were still differences between the House and Senate on the budget, the House couldn't move forward. I was really working to make sure that we kept seeing forward motion and driving ourselves towards adjournment, because I think we're ready.
Were you okay with, or are you ready to push the governor to a veto if that's what he chooses to do?
I think we'll be able to get to something. I think everybody's backed down a little bit since Friday from their lines in the sand and said, look, let's not make it about who has control over what. Let's really make it about how to do right by Vermont taxpayers. And so I'm hopeful that we're going to get somewhere.
Tamara is on the line with us from Milton. Hi, Tamara. Go right ahead.
I'm from Milton. I'm represented by Mitzi. And I was really disappointed that there weren't more attempts made to have that conversation around this issue regarding teacher health care benefits. I think the fact that the issue bubbled up means that there is concern statewide with benefits for teachers out of proportion compared to other people. And you know, Mitzi's comment that, you know, someone has to pay, and what tends to happen is the taxpayer is paying the cost for those Cadillac benefits, those benefits that are unlike their own. And I think those conversations that Mitzi hopes are happening at the local level aren't really happening. I think they're getting quickly shut down when teachers say, well, we're just going to strike. You know, I think in Franklin, Supervisory Union West, they tried to have similar conversations around reining in those benefits for teachers and kind of had some of those roadblocks put up. Where they weren't able to have a dynamic conversation. And I would just like to know, you know, why we can't extend the session or why we can't bring this topic up next year during session, because obviously it's a problem, it's a concern for myself and other taxpayers.
Tamara, thanks for the call. Speaker Johnson?
So I'd circle us back around to the fact that the Cadillac plans are no longer being offered. They are not an option. No matter what happens the rest of the year, the session here, the Cadillac plans aren't on the table anymore. And so I think that addresses the biggest part of you know what you've said there is that they're just not available.
Although, as you've said, this is then the negotiating part of the new plans is what happens then for teachers? So do they get more salary to compensate for potentially higher premiums? Or is there some other way where, you know, the district could pay a portion of the premium until a certain donut hole and then a teacher or whoever it is at the school would pay a smaller amount of the premium, which essentially means that the taxpayers are still funding that part of it. So the Cadillac plan may go away, but how and who is paying is still up for debate. So to Tamara's point about teachers saying, or as she puts it, teachers saying, look, I am going to hold the line because I want to still have the same benefits that I had. It may look different, but the effect on the taxpayer may still be the same, or we're going to strike.
I think there's one of the big conversations around the who pays is whether there is an HSA or an HRA, whether the
and that's
the
health savings account or health reimbursement account.
Yes. And so that, you know, the difference there is that either I have money in an account that's for me that I get to spend on health care that stays in that account and accumulates year after year after year. Or if there is just sort of a tally sheet, effectively, of money that I would have access to should I need out of pocket costs covered,
that is not yours,
that is not mine. It doesn't roll over year to year, and I can't use it in retirement if it's not spent on health care. Another big difference is whether whether the teacher or the school employee pays first dollar. So whether you have to sort of meet a deductible before your health benefits kick in, or whether some of that deductible is covered. You know, the other thing to think about here is that we're talking about a really broad range of school employees. And so it's not only teachers with university degrees or master's degrees, doing the teaching. Some of the other folks caught up in this conversation are people that have very, very low wages that are in the job for the health insurance. All of us know people that take jobs specifically for the health insurance because of some situation in their family or whatnot. So I think it's important to really look at the wide range of implications that a one-size-fits-all for Vermont would have. But rest assured, health plans are drastically changing no matter what happens.
Speaker Johnson, I know that you have been hearing concern from Vermonters about what might happen with their health care, beyond just the teacher health care in general. I mean, there are a lot of conversations about what's happening federally. And then we've been hearing it come out that don't worry about Vermont. Birth control, for example, both birth control for men and for women will still be protected in Vermont no matter what happens at the federal level. Insurers will still have to insure you and cover you for birth control. Are there other things that Vermonters should know about changes in federal government that would affect us here?
Yeah, I think this session has really been defined by trying to live in the shadow of fear of what's happening at the federal level. And what we saw last week with what Congress decided to do with a health care plan was terrifying, kicking tens of millions of people off of health care, saying that if you have some sort of health problem that you could no longer get insurance. Well, guess what? People that have diabetes or multiple sclerosis or, migraines, any number of pre-existing conditions are going to need health care. And so they're still going to show up in our emergency rooms, and the cost is going to be shifted, frankly, to small business people who are paying insurance premiums. But I think what Vermonters need to understand so that they can sleep a little better at night is that Vermont has taken steps to just be a backstop and to say, you know what, if you're going to operate in Vermont, you need to cover people with pre-existing conditions, that your birth control will be covered because of, people's right to determine their own reproductive choice is really paramount here. And you're not going to lose coverage for seeking health care for a condition. Those are laws that we've had in place in Vermont for a long time, and they've resulted in lower than average growth rates of insurance. And it's frankly just the best thing to do for Vermonters to create a strong, healthy future for ourselves.
So you're trying to reassure people here about—
Yes.
Okay. Anything else likely to happen on Wednesday and Thursday? Any other movement on other bills that now have a little bit of a chance to get through before the end of the session?
Well, we've got a budget that doesn't raise taxes or fees, that I think does some really good things to take care of community services and efficient use of resources at the state level. We're working on an economic development bill that creates a retirement program, a voluntary privately funded retirement program, because so many Vermonters don't have access. A housing bill to create about $100 million worth of housing activity for both low-income people but also moderate-income people, and attract the kind of millennials, paid family leave, and a number of different both environmental and civil rights protections that just help Vermont stand up to a Trump administration.
And are those things that just need to get basically the stamp at the end of the day on Thursday, or is there actual still negotiating?
No, they're still negotiating on some of those things, but there are some that just need the stamp. They're on their way to the governor's desk, and we look forward to his signature on many of them.
Well, so House Speaker Mitzi Johnson, thank you very much. I know this continues to be a very busy time. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Nice to talk with you, Jane.